Chapter 49. The crew of the Deep Endeavor had quickly found interdiction support duty to be a monotonous assignment. After 2 days on station, they had only been requested to board and search one ship, a small freighter from the Philippines carrying a shipment of hardwood timber. The commercial shipping traffic that approached Los Angeles from the southwest had been light and ably handled by the nearby Coast Guard cutter Narwhal. The Numa crew preferred to be put to work rather than circle aimlessly waiting for action, and quietly hoped traffic would pick up in their quadrant. In the ship's galley, Dirk sat sipping a cup of coffee with Summer while she studied a report on coral mortality in the Great Barrier Reef when a crewman approached and told them that they were wanted on the bridge. "We've received a call from the Narwhal," Delgado reported. "They're halfway through a container vessel search and asked us to confirm identification on a vessel approaching west of Catalina and then stand by for possible interdiction." "No advance identification from our eye in the sky?" Dirk asked. "Your father and Al took off in the Icarus this morning. They're working their way down from the north and will probably make a pass through our quadrant within the next couple of hours." Summer peered out the bridge window to the north, spotting the Narwhal bobbing alongside a large container ship that rode low in the water from its heavy cargo. Farther west, she spotted a red speck approaching on the horizon. The Deep Endeavor's pilot was already steering an intercept course towards it. "Is that her?" Summer asked, pointing a finger towards the object. "Yes," Delgado replied. "The Narwhal has already radioed her to halt, so we'll intercept her after she's had a chance to slow. She's reported herself as the Maru Santo out of Osaka." An hour later, the Deep Endeavor hove to alongside the Maru Santo, a rusty, multi-purpose cargo freighter of small size by interpacific standards. Ames's Sea Marshal team, along with Summer, Dahlgren, and three other Numa crewmen, climbed into a small launch and motored over to the freighter, tying up to a rust-stained stairwell that was lowered over the side. Having made fast friends with the bomb-sniffing dogs, Summer quickly volunteered to take the leash of one of the retrievers. As Ames and Dahlgren met with the freighter's captain to review the manifest, the remaining contingent began a bow-to-stern search of the ship. With the dogs leading the way, the search crew wedged through the ship's holds, checking the container seals and examining several loose crated shipments of running shoes and apparel manufactured in Taiwan. A gritty Malaysian crew looked on with bored amusement as the yellow labs sniffed their way through the dimly lit crew's quarters. Dirk stood on the bridge of the Deep Endeavor, studying the Japanese cargo ship. A pair of the freighter's crew stood on the deck looking back at the Numa vessel. Dirk tossed a friendly wave as the two men leaned against a railing in disheveled clothes, smoking cigarettes and cracking jokes in an obviously relaxed manner. "There is no threat from this ship," he turned and said with certainty to Captain Birch.
"How can you be so sure?"
"The crew is too lax. The men on Kang's ship were no-nonsense professionals, not the ragtag, jovial sort on this tub. There would be a slew of paranoid undercover security types running around as well," he added, recalling the image of Tongju and his men.
"Be worth noting to Ames when he gets back. If nothing else, it's still a good practice exercise for the boys. And heck, I got Dahlgren off the bridge for a few minutes at least," the captain smiled. "We've still got to find them first. There's just too many places to hide at sea," Dirk muttered.
As the search team appeared above decks for a moment, Captain Birch picked up a pair of binoculars and scanned the horizon. He noted a pair of dots far to the southwest, then scanned to the north, taking in the Narwhal as she started to pull away from the container ship. Birch started to drop the binoculars when a sudden glint caught his eye. Raising the glasses and adjusting the focus, he smiled broadly, then spoke to Dirk.
"I guess there will be a few less places to hide on the sea, now that our illustrious leaders of the deep are checking things out from the balcony."
2,000 feet above the calmly rolling swells of the Pacific, the silver Icarus floated gracefully across the sky at 35 miles per hour. While the elder Pitt handled the blimp's flight controls, Giordino adjusted a row of dials at the base of a flat-panel color monitor. A Westcam long-distance camera mounted to the side of the gondola, a supplement to the Lash imaging system, fed into the monitor, providing a zoom image of objects located hundreds of yards away.
Pitt glanced from the flight controls to the monitor, which displayed a close-up picture of the stern of a small boat, where two bikini-clad women were stretched out sunbathing. "I hope your girlfriend doesn't catch wind of your voyeuristic tendencies," Pitt laughed. "Just testing the resolution," Jordina replied in a serious tone, while prankishly zooming the image in and out on one of the women's behinds. "Ansel Adams, you're not." "Let's see what that setup will read with a real target," Pitt said, turning the airship west towards an outbound vessel a few miles away. Dropping down a few hundred feet, Pitt nosed the Icarus to starboard and increased the throttle, gradually gaining ground on the departing ship. While still nearly a half mile away, Giordino zoomed the camera lens onto the stern of the black-hulled freighter, easily reading the name Jasmine Star, Madras. He raised the camera along the ship's deck, noting a stacked array of containers, before settling on the bridge mast, where the monitor revealed a flag of India snapping crisply in the breeze. "Works like a champ," Al said proudly. Pitt looked at the lash screen on the laptop, which showed an empty swath of sea in advance of the Indian freighter. "Nothing coming up on the main shipping channel for the time being. Let's keep going south, where it looks like there's a little more activity," he said, noting several images on the left edge of the screen. Maneuvering the blimp south, they soon passed over the Narwhal and the container ship she just searched. Then they cruised over a portion of Catalina Island. Passing back over the water, Giordino pointed out the windshield towards a turquoise ship in the distance. "There's the Deep Endeavor. Looks like she has gotten into the act as well," he said, noting the red freighter idling nearby. Pitt guided the blimp towards the Numa ship, calling it up on the radio as they approached. "Icarus to Deep Endeavor. How's the fishing down there?" "Nary a nibble," Birch's voice replied. "How are you gentlemen enjoying your sightseeing flight?" "Delightful, except for Al's incessant crunching at the caviar table, which is interrupting my enjoyment of the in-flight movie. We'll see if we can't rustle you up some more business." "Roger, we'd be much obliged." Giordino adjusted the blimp's lash system, examining it for targets. "Looks like we've got an inbound vessel in the main shipping channel about 22 miles to the northwest, and what looks like a couple of stationary targets 18 miles to the west of us," he said, pointing to some gray and white patches on the monitor that contrasted with the blue ocean background. Pitt looked at the laptop, then glanced at his watch. "We ought to be able to catch the northwest ship on the fly." "Let's go see what's parked out here first," he replied, aiming the blimp to the west and towards the two large smudges on the screen that were sitting oddly still.